This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, March 24th, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums. In just a moment on the program, conversation with Michael Tilley from thecitywire.com about the latest in the congressional redistricting conversation in Arkansas and about a tribute to Elvis taking place near Fort Smith. That's in just a moment. First, some of the news from the legislature. State lawmakers and the governor are still working to find about $23 million to pay for an extra paycheck for state employees next year. It's not a bonus nor a pay raise. It's needed because the workers are paid every 2 weeks instead of twice a month. So once every 10 years, the state has to fund an extra pay period. Lawmakers recently discovered that next year is that year. Governor Mike Beebe says options include using the state surplus as well as other one-time monies like a fund balance offered by the Land Commissioner's Office.
If you don't have enough one-time funds to fully be able to defray that, then each agency will have to accommodate that out of their existing budget. And they usually do that with salary savings, or they do it with pinching pennies, or cutting down on some of their other line items within their budget.
Money set aside for merit raises could also be used. No agreement on where to find the money has yet been reached. Meanwhile, the full chambers of the Arkansas legislature have put their stamp of approval on a tax cut package totaling $35 million. The House passed a used car tax cut, a reduction on the utility tax manufacturers pay, and the governor's half-cent cut to the grocery tax. Governor Beebe says the cuts are bigger than he envisioned, but in the end are acceptable.
It will affect budgets. There's no question about it. It will affect budgets. But in a $4.5 billion general revenue budget, the $20 million additional cut will be accommodated with relatively little pain.
The full Senate has approved the other half of the package, including a tax break for some single parents and a back-to-school tax-free weekend in August. And lawmakers are asking questions about the implementation of the federal health care overhaul in Arkansas. State insurance officials are trying to set up parts of the mandate, including health insurance exchanges, rather than let the federal government institute the changes. Insurance Commissioner Jay Bradford says local control would be better.
What we're attempting to do in this legislation is to keep Arkansans where they can come to their insurance department and seek solutions to problems, and we would have the jurisdiction to do so. The option is ours to keep this for Arkansans here.
Some lawmakers questioned whether the state should put effort toward implementing the law since its constitutionality is still being challenged. The House panel will take the measure up again tomorrow. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums, with me on the phone, not from his office in Fort Smith, but on a bit of a family vacation, I believe, is Michael Tilley, who is the editor and publisher of The City Wire, a website devoted to business, politics, culture, and more of the Fort Smith region. Michael, how are you doing?
Well, I'm doing well. It was supposed to be a vacation. We're going to spend part of the week over here in Eureka Springs, which is where I am now, but there's so much news breaking, but thank goodness I'm still so glad that Al Gore invented the internet so I can work from almost anywhere and keep the City Wire updated.
One of the items that has just kind of reignited itself into the public discussion over the last day or so is the Fayetteville possibly moving to the 4th Congressional District conversation.
Yes, and the map, you know, the map is up. You know, Robbie Brock and I both have the map up on our websites, and it's going to get a lot of discussion. But and we don't know yet as of this recording, but it's likely that Wednesday afternoon or Thursday morning, this House State Agencies Committee will have considered and possibly approved that map for full consideration in the House and Senate. And you know, Kyle, I just talked to Jake Files. He's a Republican senator from Fort Smith, and I asked him, you know, why? How did this get so far? You know, the Republicans didn't appear to oppose it, and his comment was, well, you know, we didn't think it was legitimate. It was such a crazy map. We didn't take it serious. So it's caught a lot of people off guard, but it's one of the oddest, or it's not one of the, Kyle. It is the oddest looking congressional district that I have seen, and I've looked at some past congressional districts through the years. This is the oddest shaped district ever.
If if someone hasn't seen it, the 4th District includes most of the southern border counties, sweeps up through Polk and Scott, and moves over to Logan, Franklin, Johnson, and then creeps up a little bit into Crawford and over into Fayetteville and Washington and grabs Fayetteville.
Correct. You know, it's got this little horse head looking thing up into Washington County, and it creates just an odd looking third district as well. I mean, there is a portion of the third district, Kyle, that's probably not many miles away from, I mean, just a little sliver that's not many miles away from the Oklahoma border. But you know, here you have Fayetteville in the same district as Texarkana and Pine Bluff and El Dorado, and it's the craziest thing. Now, the first district has been expanded as well, and it goes all the way from top of Arkansas to the bottom, pulls in Lake Village and pulls in Searcy County there, but it doesn't touch Baxter or Marion. Over the top in the third district.
Well, given the math and the numbers that have to work out, you're going to have a couple of districts that cover a lot of geography, just by the way the
Correct.
Population dispersion is. So you're going to have a north to south or east to west district no matter what.
Right. The first and fourth districts, they've lost a lot of population in both those districts. The second district, which is central Arkansas, has gained some. And then the third district, you know, they had to lose roughly about 115,000 people. And again, I want to stress when we say lose, the districts ideally, when they're redrawn, will have the same amount of people in them. It's just that the third district had to lose about 115,000 people because it had gained so much between 2000 and 2010. So that's why they're redrawing the lines. But you're right, the first and fourth district had to grow in terms of geographic size.
And we should say that nothing is final yet. This Fayetteville to the fourth map is a proposal.
Right, it's a proposal, but, you know, Clark Hall, who's a Democrat, he's the chairman of the State Agencies Committee, and they're the ones that will push this through. And this has become his pet. This has become his baby. So, you know, when the chairman of the committee wants it, sometimes that carries a lot of weight.
Well, moving to other subjects, there is 24 hours more for people to sign a petition and have it turned in that would force the 1% tax in Fort Smith to the ballot.
Correct. I talked to the organizer, one of the organizers, Eddie York. I talked to him, I guess, Wednesday morning it was. And, they have to get 2,822 signatures. They had 30 days to do that. Originally, the city was saying that deadline fell on 5 p.m. Friday, this Friday, but now it's 5 p.m. on Saturday. Gives them the full 30 days. And they have about 3,000. They're hoping to get 4,000 signatures. You know, so whatever's weeded out, they'll still have the 2,822 signatures needed to force the 1% prepared food tax to a ballot vote instead of just being enacted by ordinance.
This is the news story that refuses to go away.
Yes. I mean, yeah, it's like the map story. I mean, it's just on and on. And one thing about the map, Kyle, just to jump back to that, some Republicans are saying they'll fight it and we'll leave. You know, we'll sign to die out of the session without a map, and we'd rather let the courts decide it than have this thing going on. I mean, I think Senator Files even used the word gerrymandered. We'd rather have the courts come up with a map rather than to approve this gerrymandered map.
Do you have any sense of, I mean, because you and I, and I've talked to Steve Clark and other people over the course of building up to this redistricting process, nobody wants to leave the third, not Boone County, not Sebastian, not Fayetteville, or it doesn't seem to be. Any sense whether there is any particular care among regular folks in Fort Smith, whether Fayetteville stays or goes in the third?
Well, yes, you know, yes, I think that they'd rather it stay. You know, the Fort Smith Chamber recently adopted an ordinance which said, look, we want to stay in the third because we have a lot in common with Washington County and Benton County, and it's better for all of us to be together in one district. So and I'm probably going out on a limb here a little bit and assuming some things, which maybe a good journalist wouldn't do, but I would think that most people in Fort Smith want to keep Fayetteville in the third district.
All right. Finally, March 25th, 1958, you were not alive. I was not alive. But the River Valley was certainly alive on that day, wasn't it?
Yes. Some guy, some people still know, have heard of him. I don't know. But some guy named Elvis Presley got his hair cut at Fort Chaffee as part of his induction into the Army. And they're going to have a big hoorah on Thursday. A gentleman with the National Archives will bring a letter that was written by some Elvis fans, a letter written to President Eisenhower saying, please don't induct Elvis, and if you do, don't cut off his pretty hair.
But they did
and,
both.
yes, they did. It was the haircut heard round the world, I think, is one photographer who was there at the time called it. But they'll have that. They're going to be presenting – they will present other archives in digital form that relate to Presley's Army records that will be there, that will be held in that Chaffee Barbershop Museum at what's now Chaffee Crossing. So, you know, that you've got to give kudos to the folks at Chaffee Crossing and the Fort Smith Convention and Visitors Bureau. They did this just a few years ago, Kyle, and a lark, hoping that it would kind of amount to something, and this thing's really taken off. I mean, with Elvis, that's a good bet, but still, it's grown into an interesting little enterprise out there at Chaffee Crossing.
Well, I'm going to let you get off the phone, put on your blue suede shoes, and get back to your vacation. Thanks so much for your time.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Kyle.
Michael Tilley is the editor and publisher of the City Wire, a website devoted to business, politics, and culture of the Fort Smith region. He is not a professional Elvis impersonator. Michael, as always, thanks for your time.
All right. Thanks.
When a motor's warm and she's purring sweet, but it let me warn ya, you're on a one-way street. She'll crowd your clothes, spin your wheels, then you're gonna know how it feels to spin out.
One of the more underrated Elvis Presley songs, Spin Out, on Ozarks at Large. Jody Beznoska is now with me in the studio.
Hello.
Hello. Jody is the Vice President of Communications at Walton Arts Center. Elvis Presley will not be at Walton Arts Center anytime soon.
No, unfortunately he won't. But in next year's Broadway season, you might hear a little music of Elvis.
You just love dropping these
Yes, I do. We're very close to being able to announce next year's season, but we're not quite there yet.
Okay. But now, if you've been listening to this show, you have two very good hints.
Mm-hmm. Actually, my father heard the show last week and heard the hint I dropped about another musical and is already making plans.
Excellent. So. But before next year's Broadway, we've got miles to go.
We do. We have a long way to go. And we've got a very busy couple of weeks coming up after spring break. You know, it's been such a lovely break for everybody. The weather's been good, so, you know, no need to come to the theater. And hopefully the weather will stay good, but we got lots of shows for you. So Saturday, if you need a little break, we have the Julian Lage Group on at 8 p.m. and 10 p.m. That's in the Starlight Jazz Club. I was reading his program notes the other day, and the kid is 23 years old, I think, and he was talking about how he's had pressure to make an album.
And he has.
And he has,
it's
finally.
Not out yet.
Right.
But I got to hear it.
Yeah.
And it's very, very good.
Yeah, he's really something. And I kept thinking about, he keeps saying, for years people have been pressuring me to make an album. And I'm going, you're 23. Wow. But yeah, he seems very, I mean, obviously he's extremely talented, but he also seems very fun and open and engaging. So we're looking forward to that. That's Saturday night, 8 p.m. and 10 p.m., two shows. And, of course, it's in the Star Theater, so it's smaller, so you'll be right up close. And then next week, we start 100 Years of Broadway, a full week run beginning on Tuesday and running through Sunday. The exciting news about that show is that we've had a contest running locally where we have asked people to submit videos and possibly get chosen to be on stage with the singers. And we have winners. We have a winner and three runner-ups, and they will all be performing. And the winner's name is Lindsay Daniels, and the runners-up are Jessica Dutton, Blakely Knox, and Alex Andrews. And so I believe they'll be performing on the Tuesday night show, and if for any reason that's different, we'll post that on our website. But that's going to be very exciting because they're going to be up on stage singing with full-fledged Broadway stars. And I think that's really a cool part of this particular show. So again, that runs Tuesday through Sunday, and there are eight shows during that time frame. And then we shift over to the following week. And on the Tuesday, we have the Washington Regional Gala.
And that is I should remember.
It's Little Big Town.
Little
Big Town, who were here performing at Walden Arts Center a couple years back, gave a great show, and have since sort of been rising stars in the industry. So that's Tuesday, the 5th of April. Can you believe it's April? And that begins at 7:30. And then Thursday begins a series of events that last for quite some time. We have Company Nacional de Danza 2 at 7 p.m. on Thursday. That's part of our 10x10 art series. This is a modern ballet company that will feature dances choreographed by a man named Nacho Duato, who I just learned has been appointed. He was appointed by the Minister of Culture of Spain to run the National Spanish Dance Company. So it's a different arts model in Spain than we have here. You know, there are national companies that are part of the governmental organization, and so he's been appointed by the Minister of Culture. So that's a pretty big deal. And he's very well known, very well respected. So again, that's Thursday, the 7th of April at 7 p.m. We will have a pre-show conversation at 6, just like we do for all our 10x10s, and then we'll have a post-show party afterwards. And that will be your last dance show of the year until we move into next season. Then we have Saturday afternoon, we have the Canadian Tenors, 2 p.m. And these, you know, young, hot group of singers. But what's fun about this event is that this is our volunteer appreciation event. And this is always great because what happens is normally we have anywhere from 20 to 40 volunteers who kind of keep the engine running at Walton Arts Center. They take tickets, they seat people, they man concessions, they do coat check.
And what's really neat is your neighbors. I mean, sometimes quite literally. Mario Moreno, who has been a volunteer for a long time, lives next to me, and it's always fun to see him there.
It's they're a huge part of Walton Arts Center, and once a year, we do a volunteer appreciation night, and for the last couple of years, it's been fun because we've flipped things, and all the staff, all of the full-time and part-time actual staff who are paid, who then go do the volunteers' duties.
And taking tickets and ushering.
I usually wind up doing concessions, and inevitably, they like to make fun of me, and, you know, can I bring this candy bar into the theater? And no, no, you can't. But it's always fun, and the Canadian Tenors are going to put on a great show, and it's a nice night. It's an afternoon this time, so it's a great way to sort of salute people who make a quiet contribution to Walton Arts Center. So.
But this show is still open to the public.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, it's not just an in-house affair.
That's correct.
Right.
Yes, so we'll do a little party beforehand where we honor the volunteers, and then we'll do the show, and we may talk about them a little bit during the show. But if for any reason, you know, people don't know what they're doing when they're taking your tickets, it's because it's the staff doing it, not the volunteers. But that's that's Saturday at 2 p.m., and that's the Canadian Tenors. Then Sunday at 7 p.m., we have John Pizzarelli and Kurt Elling. And as we've talked about, this is a double billing that wasn't originally a double billing. But John Pizzarelli was originally on our 10x10 art series, and Kurt Elling and his group were on our jazz series, but Kurt Elling got canceled because of snow. So now we have a double bill of these two amazing jazz musicians. So they will play separately, and then we are crossing our fingers that they will jam together towards the end. So that is Sunday at 7 p.m.
And that's a week from Sunday.
That's a week from Sunday. Sunday the 10th at 7 p.m., and we will have a 6 p.m. creative conversation for that as well. That's our last 10x10 arts.
Oh, that's right. That's part of the 10x10.
Yeah. So those tickets are only $10. Then Monday the 11th, we move into an Art of Wine event. Hard to believe we're thinking about Art of Wine already, but we started an event last year called Chopped. And it's loosely based on the television show. And this year there will be, and basically what happens is chefs are given a basket of unusual ingredients and asked to make a dish under time pressure. Then they're judged, and then one chef gets chopped. And so eventually you have a chopped winner. And it's really fun. There's hors d'oeuvres that will be served and food and drink, and there'll be narration and MCs, and people will be interviewing the judges. And it's very much like a cooking contest. And that is the 11th of April. That last year happened at the Nibbles Academy of Cooking. This year it will be in our Star Theater. And the chefs that we will feature this year are pretty cool. We have Jeremy from Greenhouse Grill
will be
one of the chefs. And then we have Dane Main from Petit Bistro in Bentonville, Chrissy Sanderson, who used to be at Bordino's and is now at the Northwest Arkansas Community College, and William McCormick from Farrell's.
Oh, excellent.
So it will be a fun group of chefs who will be getting strange ingredients, like, you know, I don't know what the ingredients are, but I've heard of everything from Spam to, you know, some random fruit in a can, you know. So they get this basket and they go, Okay. So that is on the 11th, and that begins at 6 p.m., and that's in our Star Theater. And then the last one I will mention is a great one for NPR people. David Sedaris will be here on the 12th of April. And he has a new book out called Squirrel Seeks Chipmunk, which is just funny. And what we've learned about his show is that he is going to be doing readings, but he's going to try to not be reading from things that he's read from before. Mm-hmm. So he's going to be sharing some of his new work, and he's going to have, you know, it's going to be kind of an informal thing. And then what's wonderful about him is he will take questions and answers, and then he will sign people's books in the lobby. And the last time he was here,
He was there till
I think it must have been 11 or midnight.
Yeah.
You know, the line stretched all the way back to the bathrooms.
He's been here at least three times previously.
Yes, I think this is his third time.
Yeah, and always draws a huge crowd.
Yeah, and he's always fun, you know. But yes, he was here about 2 years ago, and I think the last time he was here, he didn't have a new book out.
Mm-hmm.
So the hope is that with this new book, it will draw maybe some new people, but also some, you know, old school David Sedaris fans. And he's a favorite. We like having him quite a bit.
Well, gosh,
it's gonna be fun.
You have lots to talk about.
Yeah, so, you know, spring break isn't really a spring break for the marketing team at Walnut Center. But we're looking forward to everybody getting back and starting to come out for our April shows. So thank you.
Jody, thanks as always.
Thank you.
This is a Thursday edition of Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Ithi Agnihotri Mutolkar.
And a few more things that we think you should know about today.
The U.S. Geological Survey reported another small earthquake in central Arkansas. The magnitude 3.3 earthquake was recorded on Tuesday afternoon about 1 mile northwest of Greenbrier. The area has been long affected by small magnitude earthquakes since September last year. Oklahoma City-based Chesapeake Energy and Clarita Operating of Little Rock, two natural gas companies, have shut down injection wells in the area after allegations that the two phenomena were connected arose.
And from earthquakes to fire, there are burn bans in at least 13 Arkansas counties. County judges in Carroll, Boone, and Madison County, the KUAF listening area, have issued burn bans. Several other counties around the state, including Polk, Baxter, Marion, Searcy, and Van Buren, also have burn bans. Rain is in the forecast for the next couple of days.
Earlier this year, University of Arkansas Chancellor Dr. G. David Gearhart announced that over the next 3 years, the Staff Senate Scholarship Endowment of $25,000 will be matched with funds from the Chancellor's Society Fund. The University of Arkansas Staff Senate Scholarship Fund was created 10 years ago. It had originally hoped to offer a single staff scholarship, but over the years has assisted 44 student staff members with financial support worth $15,000.
In case you've been boycotting all other local media, the Arkansas Razorbacks have officially announced that Mike Anderson is the new head coach of the men's basketball team at the university. Anderson was an assistant under Nolan Richardson for 17 years at the U of A, including those glory years in 94 and 95, the back-to-back trips to the NCAA National Championship game. He most recently has been the head coach at Missouri. And the U of A women's basketball team continues to play its season. Last night, the Razorbacks defeated Oral Roberts University 78-59 in the third round of the WNIT. Arkansas will next play the winner of tonight's game between Illinois State and Duquesne. That game for Arkansas at a site and date yet to be determined.
Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art recently commissioned artist Kay Rosen to create a full-page newspaper ad for the New York Times. The ad, titled Reflection, appeared in the newspaper's annual section dedicated to museums. It features the word "we" placed exactly below the word "me," like mirror images. To quote-unquote Rosen, enlisting ease to form me and we against backgrounds of green trees and blue water, the pronouns represent the individual and the community and their relationship to art, to nature, and to each other.
Thank you very much, Ithi.
Thank you, Kyle. This is Ozarks at Large.
There is an addition to the Furman Garner Performance Studio at KUAF. The Steinway Grand inside the studio now bears a plaque commemorating the piano in memory of Mary Baker Rumsey and signifying the piano as a gift from Mark and Victoria Rumsey and the employees of Zero Mountain Incorporated. Yesterday afternoon, the piano was officially dedicated in Mary Baker Rumsey's honor.
So my name is Aurelien Bocard. I'm from Switzerland. I grew up in Geneva, and I'm studying here at the University of Arkansas. I'm doing an artistic diploma with Yoram Margulis, and I am the assistant of the opera department with Christopher Lacey.
Aurelien Bocard performed Chopin on the Mary Baker Rumsey Piano yesterday for that dedication. We'll hear more from him and from Christopher Lacey from the University of Arkansas Music Faculty in a bit. But first, more about the piano's namesake, Mary Baker Rumsey, from Mark Rumsey of Fort Smith.
My grandmother, and who the Steinway's named for, was actually a West Texas girl and grew up in Weatherford. And had a great love of music, studied. She wanted to be the first female concert pianist. And she studied in Paris for 2 years until World War I broke out in 1914, and then studied in New York for 2 years, where her teacher told her, Mary, if you just practice, you could be the greatest pianist in the world. So why don't you go back to Texas or Oklahoma or wherever you're from out there and marry somebody. She took his advice. And anyway, she instilled in her grandchildren a great love of music. And from her West Texas heritage, we had the privilege of knowing Van Cliburn very well, who was from Fort Worth. And Van Cliburn would come up and play a concert every year for the Oklahoma City Symphony. And it was just amazing. Then he would say at my grandmother's house where they would play her Steinway, he'd play a piece, she'd play a piece. And it was just an incredible period in my life.
So you actually can remember being at your grandmother's house.
Oh, absolutely.
And Van Cliburn and your grandmother trading turns at the piano.
Yeah, and playing duets.
Mark says he did inherit his love of music from his grandmother, though he doesn't play an instrument. And the love of music has extended down at least another Rumsey generation to Mark's son Joe, who also works at Zero Mountain in Fort Smith. Joe admits to quite a fondness of music as well.
I love music. I mean, I was in Colorado actually past two weekends going out to music festivals out there. And I might kind of look at my schedule throughout the year, and I almost have everything kind of based around music.
Zero Mountain, the Rumsey's business, has long supported music in the community, including a deep relationship with the Fort Smith Symphony. Mark and Joe Rumsey say a performance from the symphony is a treat, but a rehearsal under the direction of conductor John Jetter can be almost as enlightening, and not just for music lovers.
John is the glue that holds the whole thing together, but people really, corporations really need to get their management in to watch one of his rehearsals, because you know, you're sitting there with the whole orchestra, and then the magic is how they choreograph it. And it's applicable, certainly in business.
It's an interesting thing because it is a management technique to be a conductor.
Mm-hmm.
You have, I don't know how many, depending on the symphony and depending on the piece, you have scores of musicians. You have to make them work as a team. You have to respect them. And you have to bring them together, but you do have to be a leader as well.
He's managing.
Is that applicable to business?
But yeah, now, same thing.
And the thing, his magic is the way that he relates to the individual in the orchestra, because he never says anything negative, and these people love playing for him. What more can you ask for? I mean, it's just really something.
So potential CEOs could learn a lot by watching John Jetter.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they're going to, or anywhere in the world, go watch a symphony play. You know, you get to see it. And I always think about one comment, well, the violins were kind of swimming at this point or something like that. And, you know, these guys, they're incredible. And their organizational skills are unsurpassed. But he places himself in the musician's shoes. And that's, to me, that's the, you treat your people the way you want to be treated. And that's the key to everything. You know, and in our organization, we have titles for the outside, but inside, you know, we're all there to work together to create a, provide good service to our customers. And it's the same thing.
What do you think your grandmother would say if you could tell her that there's a piano now named in her honor, a Steinway?
She'd be thrilled. Absolutely thrilled. I don't know. I can't think of a better way of paying tribute to her. And, of course, our organization, without her, we wouldn't be here today. Because when Zero Mountain started up, there was really nothing there. And Don's dad, John, talked to Joe Romsey, my father, and said, Joe, if you can just hang on for a little while longer, I think you'll have something that people will use in this area. And he was really about to pull the plug on it, and my grandmother wrote the last infusion check of $25,000, which was an enormous amount of dough in the early 60s. And she was right. You know, so anyway, our folks would, I wouldn't be here.
You said she was ahead of her time. And sounds like she was always ahead of her time.
And so was her son, Joe. And just kind of laughing about certain things. I mean, a true futurist.
The first performance on the officially dedicated Steinway was yesterday afternoon when Aurelien Bocard sat down at the Mary Baker Rumsey piano. Before he played Chopin, he sat down in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio with one of the members of the music faculty at the university, Christopher Lacey. Christopher is the director of the opera program at the University of Arkansas. Aurelien has worked with Lacey during his time at the U of A. I asked Aurelien how a native of Geneva, Switzerland, lands in Fayetteville.
I met my teacher, Jura Margulis, in Germany, and I mean, it didn't happen like in 2 months, it happened like in several years, and he gave me the opportunity to come here at the University of Arkansas, and I kind of jumped on this opportunity. It was such a, I mean, that was such a great adventure.
Mm-hmm. When did you sit down at the piano for the first time? When did that start?
I was 8 years old. And my mom used to play the piano, so I grew up with the piano at home. But I wouldn't say that I was like a prodigy child at all. I mean, it came a little bit later when I was maybe 13, 14. I really enjoyed playing the piano much more, improvisation too, things like that.
Did you know then at 13 or 14 that it would be something you would like to pursue as a profession?
I mean, it's a difficult question. I always wanted to do it, but I was interested in many other things. So I didn't directly study the piano. I studied at University of Arkansas, German and musicology to become first a teacher. Mm-hmm. But when I was like 21, 22, I realized that I really wanted to play the piano.
A few moments ago when you were at the piano, not yet for the performance, but practicing, rehearsing. Mm-hmm. I was watching you, and I was watching you, Chris, and when you were done, it looked like you were having a conversation about the music. What are those conversations like with...
Well, Jura is actually Aurelien's teacher.
Sure.
And he really teaches him the mechanics. But what I do is I coach what I hear, the interpretation. And if there's something that I feel could be a little more, I don't want to use the word exaggerated, but certainly emphasized, let's put it that way, I call it to his attention. And we have very, very different musical personalities, which has been a really great learning experience for both of us, mm-hmm. even though I'm 30 years older than he is. But he has a more subdued and intellectual kind of style, and I'm a much more theatrical kind of person, and you put the two styles together, and you kind of get the kind of an ideal style. So if I feel like he's being a little bit too introspective, you probably saw me in there throwing my arms around.
You weren't throwing them. You were just kind of making a waving motion.
Right. And just sort of reminding him that through certain kinds of things, we see his personality, and that's what we're interested in, is his personality, and don't hide that.
University of Arkansas, now Steinway School. If you're playing on the campus, you're playing a Steinway. We have the Steinway here that's being dedicated. Does that make a difference to a pianist if you're going from only Steinway to Steinway? I mean, is there something similar with the instrument, providing it's in tune and things like that?
Yeah, of course there is something. I mean, the mechanics is very subtle. I always make the comparison with amazing cars, you know? I mean, if you're driving a Ferrari, I'm pretty sure that some people that collect, that have a collection of four or five Ferraris, I mean, enjoy driving those Ferraris, you know,
right,
because they don't feel the same. Although the mechanics it's so subtle is kind of similar, but they don't feel the same. And for the Steinway, it's exactly, I mean, I would say the same. I mean, it's really like comfortable to play on those piano, and there are a lot of possibilities, but every piano is different.
Aurelien Picard helped formally dedicate the musical Ferrari at KUAF yesterday, the freshly dedicated Mary Baker Rumsey piano in the Furman Garner Performance Studio at KUAF. We also heard from Christopher Lacey from the University of Arkansas Music Department and from Mark and Joe Rumsey from Zero Mountain in Fort Smith.
It's Thursday, March 24th. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
And joining us is Becca Bacon-Martin, editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
And we're still celebrating spring break, even those of us who have to go to work, because it's Art Day at the Jones Center for Families in Springdale. And today they have Mad Science of Northwest Arkansas, a Crayola Creative Fun Zone, painting stations, airbrush tattoo art, make and take crafts, and it's all
free.
Yes.
That's a heck of a deal.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it? And speaking of free, the last of the spring break movies for this part of the week at Fayetteville Public Library at 2 o'clock, Shrek Forever After.
Is that the last one?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It's very sweet. It has cute little baby things.
Ogres.
Well, and baby, whatever you get when you cross a donkey and a dragon.
That's right.
And they fly, and they're so cute.
I don't know.
So you should go. And I should go back to work.
What time is that?
It's at 2 o'clock.
And the spring break movies at the libraries?
Are free.
All right. Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
Pianist Byron Janis was born on this date in 1928. In 1943, he made his professional debut playing Rachmaninoff's Piano Concerto No. 2 with the NBC Symphony Orchestra in New York, with Frank Black conducting. Janis embarked on a successful career as a concert pianist, including a 1948 tour to South America and a 1952 tour of Europe. In 1960, the State Department invited him to tour the Soviet Union as the first representative in a new cultural exchange program. He became the first soloist in a recording made in that city by an American record company. He interrupted his career in the late 1960s at the onset of an illness, temporarily resuming it in 1972. Soon, however, his concert appearances became rarer. Meanwhile, in 1967, he had discovered two previously unknown Chopin waltzes in manuscript in Paris, and in 1973, two variant versions of them, also in Chopin's hand, at the Yale Library. This led to the 1978 French television documentary, Frédéric Chopin, A Voyage with Byron Janis, in which he discussed and played illustrations concerning the problems of determining the authentic versions of Chopin's music. In 1985, he was invited to perform at the White House. Here, he publicly disclosed that he had psoriatic arthritis affecting his wrists and hands. The ailment had not prevented him from continuing to play piano well, but it often made it impossible to play to his former high standard. In the meantime, he devoted much of his energy to teaching, composing, and humanitarian concerns. He became ambassador of the arts for the Arthritis Foundation and often plays in fundraising concerts for it. He is chairman of the Global Forum Arts and Culture Committee. In 1989, he composed the score for Turner Network Television's 1989 major documentary on Gary Cooper. He is on the faculty of Manhattan School of Music, and he works on the Board and Music Advisory Committee for Pro Musicus, an international organization devoted to helping young artists. The National Exhibit, A Personal Statement, Arkansas Women Artists, opened at the National Museum of Women in the Arts on this date in 1992. The exhibit, which lasted until June 14th of 1992 and featured 10 Arkansas artists, was the work of the Arkansas Committee of the National Museum of Women in the Arts. The committee is composed of a group of well-connected Arkansas women who work to support female Arkansas artists, focusing upon primarily visual art done by noted female artists in the state, though it also sponsors writers, poets, and songwriters. On this date in 1765, Britain enacted the Quartering Act, requiring American colonists to provide temporary housing to British soldiers. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. If you're feeling a bit restless, Eureka Springs to the rescue. They will host the first ever event called the Eurekan. It's a non-traditional sports festival. It'll take place in August, so you have time to get ready. The three-day festival will feature a triathlon, bike tour rides, bike races, and some running. Ozarks at Large's Ithi Agnihotri-Madulkar has this report.
It's meant to be something that really, you know, kind of strikes awe. Because to earn the title of the Eurekan, that's going to be someone who's really, really got it together from a physical standpoint.
Jeremy Pritchard is the public relations coordinator for All Sports Productions. The sports event management and consulting company is hosting Eureka Springs' newest non-traditional sports festival, the Eurekan. The festival will be held August 12 to 14 later this year. A multi-sport festival, the Eurekan hopes to host athletes from 12 states from across the nation. Jeremy says the festival consists of four different events.
The events are the Sprint Distance Triathlon will be on Friday afternoon, August 12th. Road bike tour and rides and racing also on Saturday morning, the 13th. And then the running events, running races on Sunday. The name of the festival, for short, is the Eurekan. And not only is that the name of the festival, but that is also the title that one would earn through participating in and completing all four events that occur from Friday through Sunday.
Jeremy notes that in some ways, the Eurekan is comparable to one of the most prestigious triathlon events worldwide, the Hawaiian Ironman. According to him, non-traditional sports such as cycling, running, triathlons, etc. are becoming increasingly popular because anyone can participate in them.
The triathlon, being a sprint distance for this race, the distances for the swim, the bike, and the run are all distances that you don't have to be an Ironman to complete. They're structured for enthusiasts, you know, people that are recreational swimmers, cyclists, runners. But the popularity, you know, we're seeing this as a trend nationwide as events like this are really taking off because people are, you know, wanting to get in shape. And this is a great way to do so. And it's something that's accessible to a wide demographic of people.
Interested individuals can participate in all events or choose one to their liking.
For all the events that make up the Eurekan can be registered for individually. If you've got people that are only interested in the triathlon, or you've got cyclists that only want to do the cycling things, or runners that only want to do the running things, One of the things that we're really excited about with the Eureka Springs Multisport Festival is the ability for anyone who is interested in doing this to register for all the events.
Even though many individuals have already registered for the triathlon, Jeremy hopes a wide array of people will register for all events.
It's actually set up so that maybe you've got a family, mom and dad are cycling enthusiasts, one's a cyclist, one's a runner, they're both runners, whatever. The thing that is so attractive for this festival is that the whole family can come. There's something for everyone to do from a participant standpoint, but also the fact that we're having it in Eureka Springs, and Eureka Springs is the host city for it. There's a lot of things to offer family members that aren't interested in doing any of the events but wanted to come and then travel, just make it like a destination race, just because there's so many things that the city of Eureka Springs offers.
Detailed information regarding events, registration, sponsorships, and volunteering will be available on www.eurekasportsfestival.com.
There's going to be lots of information on the site there, as far as, you know, you have clickable links for registration for any of the individual events or to register for the Eurekan. And we'll have links on the website to follow us on Twitter and our Facebook page. We'll have a lot of updates coming through the social media areas as well. So we hope everyone will click on those links, follow us at Eureka on Facebook, and also check out the website eurekasportsfestival.com.
Being a triathlete himself, Jeremy will also be participating in one of the events.
I'm actually thinking about doing the 50-miler bike ride on Saturday. And I may also do one of the running races on Sunday.
The first annual, the Eurekan, will be held August 12 to 14 in Eureka Springs. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Iti Agnihotri Mudholkar.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Time for another question and another chance for you to earn a couple of free tickets to see the Canadian Tenors, a matinee performance, Saturday, April 9th at Walton Arts Center. If you answer today's question correctly, you will be put in with all the other correct answers, and one lucky winner will be drawn this afternoon. Again, it's for two tickets to the Canadian Tenors, Saturday, April 9th, an afternoon performance at Walton Arts Center. Today's question deals with basketball because, as you have probably heard, Mike Anderson has been officially announced as the new head coach for the Arkansas Razorback basketball men's basketball team. The men's basketball team started playing in December 1923. The first two games were in Tahlequah against Northeastern Oklahoma State. Arkansas won both of those games, as they did their first ever home game in Fayetteville against Boynton Boys School. We don't know anything else about Boynton Boys School. But the fourth game in Razorback basketball history was a loss. Who was the first team ever to defeat the University of Arkansas Razorback men's basketball team? Was it Fort Smith faculty, Jonesboro YMCA, or Hendricks College? Who, in late 1923, gave the Razorback men's basketball team its first ever loss? Again, the choices are Fort Smith faculty, Jonesboro YMCA, or Hendricks College. If you think you know the answer or just want to take a guess, 1-800-522-5823. 1-800-522-KUAF. You have 5 minutes to call in your guess. Good luck. And the answer to today's question, the first team ever to defeat the University of Arkansas Razorback men's basketball team, the choices were Fort Smith faculty, Jonesboro YMCA, or Hendricks College. The correct answer, Jonesboro YMCA. Sometime in December 1923, Jonesboro YMCA defeated Arkansas 38-25, but the next four times the two teams played, Arkansas won. So Arkansas all-time 4-1 against Jonesboro YMCA. Local support for Ozarks at Large comes from Dr. Charles A. White Periodontics and Dental Implants, celebrating 25 years of care for Northwest Arkansas. Information about periodontal care, including gum grafting, computer-guided dental implants, and minimally invasive laser therapy, is available at drcawhite.com. Serving as your NPR affiliate for the past 26 years, this is KUAF Public Radio, 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Springtown. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for tuning in to this edition, another brand new edition of Ozarks at Large, tomorrow at noon.